Hey guys, welcome to our October Halloween episode. Just a little bit early, but coinciding with a very important date, a little bit more important than Halloween, the premiere of Walking Dead Season 7. If you are not a Walking Dead fan, or if you haven't yet caught up, if you've yet to do some binge watching of a few episodes and get caught up to the Season 7 premiere, then perhaps go hit pause on this, go watch a few episodes, and then come back. We'll be waiting, because this is going to be a spoiler-laden episode, talking all about the format of the show, the style that has developed over the several seasons, but also focusing on the contents of the Season 7 premiere episode, which some people are calling a game changer for the series. So you've been warned.
You have been warned. To warn you, who are we? Who is talking to the listeners?
Oh, come on. People should know by now.
You hate when I do this, don't you?
Well, just because it does. I don't know if we have a lot of people who are return listeners.
But they like to hear, you know, our elevator pitch each time, don't they?
Oh, fuck it. I'm Nick, and I edit a lot of horror movies up in Canada.
And I'm Josh, and I edit a lot of corporate stuff down in the States in Washington, D.C.
Sweet.
There we go.
And we both have beards.
And we both have beards. I trimmed mine up, by the way, this weekend.
Yours is much more presentable than mine.
I took my homeless looking level down from like an 8 to like a 4.5.
I've yet to get measured on the homelessness scale, but I'm probably somewhere between, you know, sidewalk and gutter. So,
well, we would fit right in on an episode of The Walking Dead then, wouldn't we?
Absolutely. I would love to do that. I would love to be one of the zombies someday, because I think I've got that zombie stagger down pretty pat. Just look at me in the morning. That's pretty much what I'm like.
So I know nobody else can see this, but behind me right now, I can see in my camera, my dog's just walking around back there. And last night after watching the premiere, I'm upstairs, like in bed, talking to my wife. She doesn't watch the show, and I'm with the dog, and I'm just like in just utter shock from the episode. And I'm sitting there, I'm talking about the dog. I'm just like, this dog is not going to handle the zombie apocalypse well. Like, I don't know what we're going to do with her when it happens.
I really do walk around and kind of measure people based on how I feel that they're going to survive a zombie apocalypse. So, and in no particular, like, I'm not judging them, you know, in a way like, I'm not going to befriend them. They're not going to be on my team because, you know, I want winners on the zombie apocalypse. I want survivors. But it is interesting to kind of, I guess, classify who is more fit to survive, you know, physical fitness, but also who, like, yeah, you look like you're pretty savvy, you know, like how to, you know, how to swing a weapon or how to shoot a gun, or you know how to get the nitty gritty stuff done.
So it sounds like you're a little more Team Negan than Team Rick.
Oh, I don't know. Yeah, Team Negan's got they're a little bit more fashionable, that's for sure. But Negan's got the real, he's got the Esquire magazine fashion fall season happening. It's you know, if you're going to be a villain, you got to look good. But anywho, like we did warn at the beginning of the episode, we are going to be talking about what did occur and answering the big question that everyone's been asking since the season 6 finale. But also, hey, we're going to talk more about the post-production editing side and talk about, hey, what was the style, the format of the show as it unfolded, and also the bridge between season 6, season 7, was that told in a very effective way? Was it a good payoff, or did it fall flat? So let's get some fan-isms right out of the way. Josh, as a whole, what did you think of the episode?
So the episode itself was a good episode. I mean, good in the sense that it kept my eyes on the television. I kept finding myself standing in front of the television instead of sitting on the couch like every 30 seconds. It's good in that sense, but as a person inside, like deep down, I feel like something was torn out of me. Like I lost a little bit of innocence watching that episode.
And have you followed the show like since it first aired?
So I've seen all the episodes. I mean, I'm a huge fan. Walking Dead's my favorite show. I didn't really start watching live on TV till probably season 4. And I, you know, played catch up before then. But since season 4, yeah, I've watched, you know, pretty much every Sunday, because I always know that, you know, I'm going to see a spoiler on, you know, Twitter or something, you know, on Monday morning.
It has become that show where, you know, you need to remove yourself, go through a social media hiatus, because people do. I think it's the number one suspect for shows that the fans will just readily post stuff that spoil parts, crucial parts of the plot. Not even like, I'm going to post an article, I'm going to talk, you know, here's a link to my blog that I'm going to talk about what happened in the episode. No. They put right in the headline, this dude just died.
Right.
Hashtag,
right.
Spoiler alert.
Gizmodo, you know, articles and everything. Yeah, exactly. And I try not to be that person. But I do understand that if I am not watching, I am staying off the internet, you know? Yes, it is one of those things. It's not like a movie. Like, I remember with Star Wars 7, you know, spoiler for Star Wars 7, when Han Solo dies.
No!
People were all up in arms, you know, a week after the movie. Like, I agreed with that. Like, people shouldn't be saying that on social media. You know, wait a couple weeks. You know, I was actually on the fence of wait till after Christmas, wait till, you know, the New Year to start talking about that. But, like, with The Walking Dead, when there's, you know, 16 million people watching it live and wanting to second screen their experience on their phone, like, yeah, you're going to have to avoid the internet.
Yeah, yeah. It's just a fact of life, unfortunately. Whereas I've actually been a fan of the show since it first started, because as soon as I heard the words zombie TV series, oh boy, like that to me was one of the game changers. For some reason, it had just been it wasn't even feasible, the idea of a zombie series being taken to TV. Like, they dominated movies, but this is like the very first instance that, like, oh my God, you can actually make a show out of this. This is awesome. And Frank Darabont was at the helm of it. All these, you know, it had strong acting power. It had a strong crew, great writing team. And it was just, it was set up for success and so much excitement. So I've watched it ever since then. However, I have been a Netflix watcher, so typically I'm a season behind. However, for the premiere, I did go on to, and probably this may be a habit now, I'll tune into the MCU website to watch it from there, just to keep up and stave off any of the spoilers that might come at me.
Yeah, I remember, because it was, I think season 4 was about to start, and like my sister and brother-in-law were in town, like staying at my house, and they had mentioned The Walking Dead, and I was like, yeah, you know, I just never started watching it. I know it was kind of a big thing. And they're like, no, we're not going out tonight. We're going to stay in. We're going to watch season one, episode one. And fast forward, you know, like 6 hours later, we had, you know, finished the first season. And then I was hooked.
Oh, yeah. Like, from that season moment. One was only 6 episodes.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a ways back.
Which I started, you know, the other day when we decided we were going to talk about The Walking Dead. I was like, oh, I wonder how much I could watch in the next couple of days. So I did start on Saturday, season 1, episode 1, and I got about 20 minutes in before I got interrupted and, you know, jumped back to season 7 last night.
You get the binge watcher badge, that's for sure.
Yeah.
So yeah. My immediate fanism thoughts to get out of the way were that I actually didn't have to go through the whole cliffhanger thing, that anguish that a lot of other people did, because I just caught up with the end of season 6 like last week, like not even that, like 3 or 4 days ago, and so I've only had to wait like that many days. I knew that there was some sort of cliffhanger and that it had to do with someone dies but you don't know who it is, but I didn't know it was a guessing game of like the entire team. So yeah, so luckily I didn't have to wait that long to get that answered, but lo and behold, the episode arrives and we finally get the answer that many people have been waiting months to know. They've killed off 2 characters. Whoop-de-doo. But they did like a fake out. They always said, like, we're going to kill off 1 character, Negan, to establish this new character that they've actually been teasing at and hinting up for the past half season. he finally has arrived and to demonstrate just how different of a villain he is, which I think is something they really did have to do, because Walking Dead, I think, suffers from some poor use of villains. He offs Abraham and in a very brutal way, and then comes out of nowhere. And, you know, Abraham is kind of like a secondary character. He hasn't really been along that long. So, okay, that was like, yeah, we're not really attached to him. And then he kills off Glenn, a character that has been around since episode one.
Episode one. I'm sitting here violently pointing my finger at Nick.
Yes, I don't know if that's like an American way of flipping me off, or if you're holding up a one. But yeah, that was with passion.
From episode one.
Mm-hmm. Very few original Walking Dead members. Yeah. Well, aside from Rick and Carl now.
Carl was episode two.
Okay, sure. Yeah. But all right.
I'm pretty sure.
probably. I can't remember. That's been so long. But yeah, of the originals from season one. Yeah, he's, you know, aside from Rick and Carl, he was the only one.
Daryl.
Yo, right. That's such a bad move. Of course.
Come on.
I give Daryl complete immunity, though. Like, his character is so beloved. I actually thought that it was going to be Daryl, because that would have been the total Joss Whedon move. Like, he is the most evolved character. He has had the greatest story arc so far. And I'm having trouble where else they can take him now. Like, he has completely 180'd from the character he used to be, and he's redeemed himself. He's a strong member of the team. He's probably the strongest member of the team. And I actually thought, yeah, obviously, they've got to kill him off.
Well, I do think, just for a pure fan perspective, like today, like just watching the social media stuff today, like there's so many people that are saying, I'm done with Walking Dead. I can't believe they did that. I'm never watching again.
Oh, they're drama.
And if they would have done that to Daryl, like that would have been times 50.
True. That's my writer side, or like my filmmaker side, says kill Daryl because of who, like, but he is the most beloved character. So, and of course the showrunners are not going to allow that, because hey, that's the character that the audiences are most invested in. So yeah, they're not going to kill him. So that's why I put him in the immunity pile. He's going to live forever. He'll be, you know, to the end of the show, he'll be there. So I never even considered him, really, for a second, that he would go. But
let's this is not on our little topic list, but the end of the show as a whole, I think it was Patrick on our Facebook page, you know, saying earlier today why he doesn't watch The Walking Dead, because he doesn't think there can be a happy ending or something to that effect. But do you think there will ever be a happy ending?
Oh, that's that's kind of jumping straight to the end here. But sitting back and looking at where The Walking Dead started and where it has come now, in some way, I'm actually hearing Negan's words. Like, think about what has happened, before, what's happened now, and what could happen. And those words are having some different meaning right now, because it's it's deviating from the storyline of the comic book in such that it's free. It doesn't have to follow back. They've deviated enough from the comic, but borrowed enough that, you know, I think that the showrunners have established, we don't need to follow the comic. So the way the comic is going to end, you know, we can go a completely different direction. But the way the show started, this whole post-apocalyptic story just keeps, in its seventh season, going on and on and on and on. And it's tough to stay invested in a show when you don't really see where it's going. And so this gimmick that they did right now with Negan, new villain, and also the who's it going to be character death, I think was a ploy to reinvigorate the show, to get people's interests back up, because, hey, it did just that. But now that that's gone, what are they going to do?
Right. Yeah. And I know, just watching a little bit of The Talking Dead last night and some other stuff that I heard, that kind of the show as itself is kind of doing this. It's now in two halves. It's everything before Negan and everything after Negan. Like, it's supposed to be completely different, allegedly.
Well, we'll see just how different it can be. The, Negan, and how I did kind of allude to this earlier, this episode was really just served as a vehicle for the introduction of this new character, which they really had to bold that word new and say, this is something you have not seen before. And so this is, you know, something to look forward to, because these guys have never faced this villain before. It is a game changer. And it, I am thinking more like, you know, writer, storyteller, because if I think that The Walking Dead has suffered from a lack of effective villains in the past, the governor was a great one. And
was he?
It's the only great one that they had. That's name me one other strong Walking Dead villain.
No, because I can't.
Exactly. So he's the only one. So by default, he's the best one they got. And he was good in that he was very similar to Rick. You know, they shared a lot in common. So it was kind of a good comparison between, you know, it was a good way to see, you know, where Rick could go if he was pushed in the right or wrong direction. So with the entry of Negan, he's not like Rick. He is completely a dictator, rules by fear. He threatens this group in a way that they've never been threatened before, which is exactly what I think the show needed, because the group was far too invincible. And I think that they really established that with, you know, seasons past, where these guys go up against, you know, tough ass soldiers and they almost never take hits, never take casualties. They were very cocky when they encountered the new townspeople who, you know, Hilltop, and they said, oh, you got this guy Negan who's bothering you? Okay, yeah, we'll take care of him for you. We don't need to know anything about him. No information needed. You know, we know what we're doing. We're going to go take him out. So I felt like they were pretty invincible. These characters never really died, you know, and very rarely would one of the primary characters die. And so you never really felt this danger for them. Now the danger is very much there.
Well, yeah. I feel like, I don't know the stats off the top of my head, but like in season six, it felt like none of the main characters died. I'm sure definitely a couple of people did. I know a bunch of people from Alexandria did. But as far as that core of Abraham and Glenn and Maggie and Daryl and Rick and Michonne, like they were all always safe. And yes, you're right. Now it feels like, man, they could kill off anyone at any moment, kind of like how it was in like seasons three and four.
Yeah. And I really think that's what the show needed. They needed that danger to be present, and to say, hey, your favorite characters could go really easily, such as the case for Glenn. So I think that how they introduced that character, Negan, you know, through those acts, a lot of audience members criticized the episode for the overuse of violence and gore, and think that was too much. I think, nope, that was absolutely effective. It was exactly what the show needed. You know, the show is about zombies that eat and rip apart human beings while human beings are shooting and killing each other. Of course it's violent. I think the show's kind of forgotten that. In fact, that was even criticized way back when. I can't remember, you know, the change from one season to the next. Some big change happened. I think they replaced a showrunner, and they substantially cut down on, I think it was season two, actually, cut down on the level of violence and gore, and actually zombies. Zombies were relegated to the background for a lot of one of the seasons, and the show suffered a huge criticism from audiences for that. And so now they're going the opposite way and saying, okay, here's a guy who bashes skulls in with a baseball bat, and people are saying, that's too much.
Yeah, I feel like this is by far like the most backlash I've seen since when Carol shot the little girl.
Oh, that was intense.
Yeah. That was the end of season four? End of season five?
Probably
it was one of the two. It was after the prison fell.
After the prison, but before
I think season five, Terminus. Mid-season.
Before Terminus, yeah.
Season four, yeah, I don't know. Kind of getting my dates wrong. It's been a while since I've seen those, because I always start on season one and never make it through. Yeah. That was some next level violence for The Walking Dead.
not even violence. It wasn't even an overly violent act, but it was by nature of it. Yeah, it was harsh, but that's what you should expect from, you know, this sort of story.
It was a little much.
It's hard hitting. Again, like, where can the show go from here? Like, these are the things that it does kind of have to bring in to kind of refresh the show, because otherwise, you know, yeah, where is the end in sight? Where are they going to go with this?
Right. Like, I definitely don't think they can do that every episode. Like, it can't be, no spoilers, but like Game of Thrones Red Wedding. Like, Game of Thrones is not the Red Wedding every single episode. So The Walking Dead cannot be like this with Lucille going crazy every single episode. I actually think that would piss me off as a fan, but I'll still continue to watch, of course.
Now, what is it? Because Game of Thrones is hailed for its storytelling. The writers of that show off characters left and right. Like, they've set the show up in a way that your most beloved characters on that show, they may be gone in 5 minutes. You must fear for everybody.
But I'm trying, no spoilers for Game of Thrones, but I do feel like where we are right now with Game of Thrones. Oh yeah, you don't watch.
I'm catching
but
up.
Like right okay. now, we're actually at where The Walking Dead was the end of season 6, where, all right, we have this cast that's been together for a while and it seems like they're not going anywhere. And now I feel like Game of Thrones is going to go all, you know, Negan or Red Wedding on us. Again.
Well, yeah, again. Well, at least Game of Thrones feels like, and I know I'm kind of outside looking in on this, looks like at least for a story arc from season 1 to season X, that they do have a sense of direction and where they're going, and with all of these characters as well. Am I wrong with that?
Oh, no, not at all. Well, but like The Walking Dead, I mean, it's people walking through the woods coming across other people walking through the woods. I mean, that's just what it is.
Sure. And so the story arc being like, because that's what I started to question a few seasons ago, when it felt very aimless, the story arc of the entire show. And so that became, it became a reason for me to turn it off. And I actually did turn it off for a little while, because I need to, as an audience member, I need to know where you're taking me. I need to have an idea.
What is the point besides survival?
Yeah. What is the end game? Because I have absolutely no idea what that could be for a zombie apocalypse show. Because really, it's either, you know, they ultimately have to survive and like, oh hey, all the zombies are gone, we've killed them all, or, you know, a happy ending, we go to live on, or something else like a la 28 Days Later, where it's not quite the end of the threat, but it's the end of the story arc for these characters. And so that is definitely missing for me. So I think this gimmick is going to wear off now that it's played out. And people are definitely going to tune in for Negan only, and to see how our heroes are going to fight him back. But then, okay, what next?
Yeah. So, back to some of the editing about the episode. Sure. What did you think about not getting the answer of who died until 20 minutes in?
I expected that, actually. I would have been very surprised if if they opened with that, because it is a big question, and it was the cliffhanger, and people have been talking about it all summer, so you can't really just spit it out in the first 5 minutes in the opener before the opening credits. Like, yeah, you got to let it play out a little bit. And not only that, but because of the format of the show, the episode rather, we got to see the impact on the main characters, specifically on Rick, before we found out who it was. So it was less that, you know, we want to know because we want the reaction. We want to have the surprise. Now we're seeing the torment that Rick is going through, and then, you know, that gets carried over to the reveal of who the character dying was. It probably could have lasted to the end of the show, but a lot of people, I think, would have called that a cheap ploy just to keep people hanging on. So I think that was a good time.
Yeah. So I on the other hand, thought that I would either at least have the answer before the second commercial break, or I'd get it at the very end. So when I didn't get it after, you know, the first two commercial breaks, I was like, okay, they're just going to drag this out like they always do. And then all of a sudden, nope, they did it. You know, they offed Abraham. And then after, as soon as Daryl punched Negan, I was like, all right, here comes Glenn. And then sure enough, you know, 2 seconds later, Glenn goes. And Glenn went hard, man.
Horribly. That was beautiful, beautiful makeup effects work on that.
Man. I think that was real. They just
kidding. They just swung for it. Yeah.
So you know what? At the end of season six, as non-spoiler as I try and be, I did somehow come across somebody saying something to the effect of Glenn, the character, Steven, I forget how to say his last name, starts with a Y, he had not re-signed his contract. And that was at the end of season six. So for the past 7-8 months, however long it's been, like, I've been sitting there like thinking, I really hope I'm wrong and I didn't hear the spoiler correct, but cat's out of the bag.
And I was even actually watching the opening credits, because the opening credits do change every season. And also I was looking for a hint that to see, okay, who's missing from the opening credits. And I couldn't really even pick out the name. Steven Yeun is actually,
Yeun, Yuen.
Going back to, I guess, like, to the his death, and also overall, the episode is just laden with a lot of brutal violence, even for this show in particular. Negan is just a decimator in this, no holds barred. The deaths are anything but clean. They definitely show a little bit more than they are used to on this episode, during the series. Do you have a strong stomach, and did you think this was too much violence use?
It was about like a 12. They could have brought that back down to like an 11. I would have been okay with it. And like I said a couple minutes ago, like, I think I was okay, remotely okay, I use that word lightly, with it for this episode. But if they continue to do that going forward, I'm like, man, I'm going to have a couple beers while I watch these, because that was pretty tough to watch.
And I guess, I don't know, maybe I'm a little bit messed up, because I'm pretty numb when it comes to this sort of stuff.
I don't watch horror movies. I mean, this and Game of Thrones is about as violent as I ever watch.
Game of Thrones is pretty violent. Yeah.
Yes. But like, besides that, like, no, man, I'm watching like NCIS.
Okay. Well, I don't know. Like, they show like heads being bludgeoned in. They show the aftermath. They show, you know, the brain splattered all over the place. They show Glenn's eye popping out. They show a lot of stuff. That's not even to mention all the regular zombie kills, heads being separated from bodies, and, you know, yada yada yada. I don't know. I don't react to that. I could have been eating, you know, a incredibly rare steak, and, you know, not had my stomach turn whatsoever while watching this. Like, that's the kind of guy that I am. So I always look at the violence used as, that's the tool that is being used. The storytellers of the show, be it the writers, the director, or the editor, who, you know, whoever, they're using that to tell part of the story. And part of that story is Negan is the devil. And so this villain is incredibly severe. You've never seen this before. That's what the violence says for me. So the people who have criticized the show for being too violent, maybe you do need a beer before you watch the show, because that's what the storytellers have chosen to use to tell their story.
So for violence in The Walking Dead, but more so for you in the horrors that you cut, like, what role does violence play? Like, how do you use violence as a storyteller?
well, violence can be used for many things. It can be used in this case, you know, in the case of Walking Dead, like I said, it was a tool for character development introduction for this new villain. Let's face it, in horror, it's usually used for shock value. So with Hostel, with, you know, the Saw franchise, it's usually used to sate the bloodlust of male teenagers who come to see the movie, which that's more exec speak. You know, I know that both males and females alike can love or hate gore. And I know some pretty twisted 50 plus year olds who also love that sort of stuff as well. But the bottom line is a lot of gore use in movies, no surprise, is used to shock people, and it's used to horrify, but not in a storytelling way. You know, it's extraneous to the story usually. So, The Hills Have Eyes remake that came out some years ago, maybe about a decade ago, that had incredible use of violence. I don't know if you ever saw that, not the original one, but the remake. It was incredible, very violent, very cerebral, very intense. And I think that all that violence was used effectively for the story that they're telling. You know, it is some brutal, it's not a feel-good movie, it's some brutal stuff. You know, High Tension, same thing. Brutal movie, but the violence was used as a tool, it wasn't misplaced. You know, but you look at some other movies like House of a Thousand Corpses, okay, maybe they're going a little bit too, you know, crazy with the blood and guts, and, you know, they're throwing it in there to shock and awe and, you know, turn some stomachs, and also, you know, appease to a lot of, you know, bloodlusting audiences out there. But
so now for the violence that we didn't see, which was the shoot, what's the kid's name?
Oh, Carl?
Rick's kid. Carl's arm. Mm-hmm. What did you think about that scene?
Thank you for bringing that up, because I'm going to completely double back on what I just said and say it can be used as an effective tool. However, implied violence or implied gore always trumps the gore that you show, in my opinion. And that was my favorite moment. That was my tensest moment of the entire episode, was when Rick it's a story straight out of the Bible. Negan is not convinced that.
Damn it, you brought that up. I was going to bring that up.
It screamed that while I was watching it. I was like, this is totally the story of Abraham. And you know, I totally paid attention in Sunday school. You know, Negan's given Rick an ultimatum that you have 3 seconds. You got to chop off your boy's arm here, or I kill everybody. And that was for me the high point of the show, because I actually thought, you know, in the previous season they shot out Carl's eye, and so all right, they're not afraid to deform some of these characters a little bit to mess them up, leave something permanent. I thought, oh man, is he actually going to do this? And that's the turning point. This is a point where this character, we have not seen this character, you know, Rick, hit this low since season 1, episode 1. Like, he was reduced to a, he was begging for mercy. There's, snot coming out of his nose as he's just pleading, saying, no, like, I don't want to do this. He's got nothing. You know, the villain has succeeded in bringing him down.
I think a couple times we've seen Rick like that. But yeah, this was, again, next level Walking Dead. So as this was unfolding, you know, he drew the marker on his arm. I was like, you know, the whole time I was like, they're not going to do it. Like, it's going to be Abraham and Isaac, right, from the Bible. And right before, it's going to get stopped. And this is pretty much just to see if Rick would do it. Mm-hmm. And this has been played out, you know, dozens of times in other, you know, different, you know, shows and movies. But then I started to think, well, with all the other expletive that we saw, you know, tonight, maybe they are going to do it.
Yeah.
So I didn't actually know at the end afterwards. I didn't know if I was surprised or not, which is a, I guess, a good feeling. I don't know. Yeah. Good as in good. I was oddly surprised. I'm not sure.
And so I guess what you asked before, like, what, you know, of all the blood and gore spilt throughout the episode, what about that one moment where he doesn't actually go through with it? He doesn't have to cut off Carl's arm, but that the thought, that setup that they had put where, yeah, like, Negan draws a line on his arm and he describes to him very specifically, you know, we need you to cut this way, you know, do a 45 degree angle cut so that we can, you know, take a skin flap and, you know, sew it over. And, you know, he's very descriptive in it.
But for whatever it's worth, I do actually think that that made Negan a little less scary.
What, that I little think if mercy?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, probably. And I like how he knew what kind of threat Rick is. And so he's not a villain who underestimates these heroes. He says, like, you know, he's picked Rick out of the crowd and said, you're the leader. You're the one that I need to break. And so everybody else here has learned, you know, who I am and what I can do. But you, I can see you still want to kill me. And he needs to take care of that. That's why this whole episode is just about breaking that spirit and bringing him right down and you know, teaching him, you can't touch me. You know, I out-villain you.
I do hope that everyone else is glad that that didn't happen, because poor Carl, I mean, been shot through the heart, like, been shot through the eye. I mean, what next for that kid, man? Like, he had it bad enough growing up.
Yeah, he definitely doesn't have it very easy. And you know what? I loved his response. Like, he, to me, like, he's going to probably take over the reins at some point, because throughout all this hell that these characters are going through, you know, what is his response? You know, when, you know, his arm is threatened to be cut off, he looks at his dad and just says, just do it. I'm like, I'm good. Just go for it.
Yeah, as I do feel like at that point, almost, I feel like all the other characters would have said the same thing.
Yeah. Well,
yeah,
maybe some of them probably would have. Some strong characters, I think, were showing a lot of weakness during this episode. But so in an exercise of writing, of trying to introduce a new threat for your protagonists, and also show a little bit of, I guess, like, backward stepping for some of these characters. You know, some of these characters have been built up to be very strong, and I guess, like, to put them up against this villain, they've got to de-evolve the characters a little bit. You know, Michonne was a, you know, by the end, she was like, hey, we get it, we'll do whatever you want. Like, but she is one of the strongest characters. To take those characters back, it was, I think, a really good exercise in writing for the screen, where, you know, in one episode, all this happens. And I think it was very well executed. I think it was good.
Yeah, so I'm looking forward for The Walking Dead to do their usual Walking Dead thing and give me three episodes of nothing. Just give me 3 weeks of nothing.
And this is actually a good switch up from the formula that they found themselves stuck in. Because I remember the season with the prison. I think about that time, it was almost a joke that the Walking Dead writers had reduced all the episodes to a formula of the opening, the pre-credit scene is going to be a holy shit moment. And then credits, and then 40 some odd minutes of slow moving crap, and then a holy shit moment at the very end, and then credits. So, like, funny story. I think one of the prison episodes, like, I think, like, just when they first got to the prison, I was watching an episode and it was almost to the very end. I wasn't sure how far in it was, but it just, the boredom scenes had just passed, and it just hit an excitement peak. Like, ah, something big just happened. At that point, my then girlfriend, you know, walked in the door. And so I hit pause and talked to her for a second, and she said, oh, are you watching Walking Dead? And I said, yeah, just give me a second. the episode just hit a holy shit moment, so I think it's almost over. I hit play. I kid you not, one of the characters says, "Holy shit," and then it goes to credits. Could not have planned it better in a million years. But it just goes to show like what the writers were kind of stuck in that rut before, and hopefully they've broken out of that now. So
I don't know. I need a one episode break.
You need a bit of a bit of a buffer.
Yeah. What was it? The start of season 5, was that Terminus?
Yeah, which that was lame as a story.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, Terminus just happened so quick.
That's the thing. It was built up so much, and I think it was more present. It was a bigger thing in the comic, but it was built up so much the season before where everyone's going to Terminus. They mm-hmm. get there, something, it's kind of left on a cliffhanger. And I think like episode 1 or episode 2 of the next season, it was resolved. And
oh, yeah, I think it was episode 1. They were all out.
They're all out. But then like, episode 2, like the some of the leftovers from Terminus kind of followed them, but they got killed off pretty quick. And it was just like they built this thing up and kind of let it fizzle out. Like that was a bad use of a villain.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. But and then they strung it along for, the rest of the season with the Terminus people. And yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
So I'd say maybe we're wrapping up soon. Do we have more on The Walking Dead?
Well, probably. First of all, a little trivia tidbit, because I guess they wanted to really, really keep a clamp down on the spoiler of who bit the bucket for season 7 before the premiere. So in order to keep a tight lip on it, they actually, and also this was a ploy by the filmmakers too, they actually went ahead and filmed every character's death.
I heard that.
So they actually did have the, if they wanted to have the option to switch out who actually dies. So they could have done that at any point, but they also recycled that footage into the episode itself. You see little flashbacks of, Rick starts to think of it could have been anybody. And
I did like that.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. But also a good way to cover their asses too.
I know not everybody likes it when it kind of goes, The Walking Dead goes into like the mental thinking, like what is real, what isn't real. Type stuff, like when Rick was hallucinating, in the basement of the prison and all that stuff. But that is something that I actually do kind of dig. I liked it.
I liked it. I thought it was a good, like I said, it was a good use of he had to fear for the rest of his team. And so, those flashbacks or flash forwards, flash possibilities, we're going through his head. On a whole, too, the whole format of the show, how it, the pacing of it, how it kind of left you guessing for the first 20 minutes for who died, and then it kind of jumped back and forth in time for the large part of the episode. Is that something that you were on board with, or something that you thought got in the way?
I'm on board with it for this episode. I do remember maybe season 3. I'm just guessing they did do like half a season where it was like the second half of a season where it would like jump forward and back in time, like every episode. And for, 6-7 episodes in a row, that got kind of old. But for this one, like, I think it worked pretty darn well.
Yeah. No, I liked it. And like I said, just don't overuse it, please. There's been a lot of other criticism from, I'll include some links to these articles, these other people's thoughts, because, hey, you're probably interested in other people's thoughts, not just ours. But from The Verge, one of the writers there, Brian, has said that from the beginning, the series was able to mash up violent zombie death with legit character development. The quality of the drama and emotional engagement made it a good hybrid, but now the balance is less nuanced with this new showrunner, and also criticized heavily the use of gore, saying that's not quality television. It was torture porn masquerading as storytelling, and AMC should be ashamed for airing it. My God, Walking Dead fans are really sensitive. But what are your thoughts on that?
Just Don't make it a habit.
All right, fair enough. Straightforward.
Yeah.
Anyways, we've also got other thoughts, other links, articles that critique the episode, which I'll include in the show notes, as well a little rundown on the. We'll include a link to the evolution of the opening sequence, which I think that you, Josh, had commented on before we even started recording. But it's been one of the pointed out favorites of the series. The marked favorites is because it's an opening sequence that. Has evolved with each and every single scene. Sorry, with each season, it changes up just a little bit, which some other shows are kind of borrowing / copying.
Yeah, so I mean, I love like the season one opening titles with, you know, the crow eating like the eyeball of like the teddy bear or whatever, and then just that final shot of all the cars going one way and then Rick riding on a horse into Atlanta mm-hmm. on the other side of the freeway, like that shot right there in the title sequence just hooked me from the beginning.
Mm-hmm. Man, well, I feel like going back and rewatching now. Cool. Well,
that should I do think everyone who hasn't gone back and watched season one, just go back and watch episode one or episode one and two and just like kind of remember where you came from with this. And then when you do go back and watch episode one at the very beginning with the zombie girl, because I just watched this, ask yourself, how did this zombie reach down and pick up the teddy bear and then continue to walk? Think about that. I don't know.
Why do you even, sure people, why? What's
people have been talking about that for, you know, probably since the show began, you know, but you don't see any other zombie that's done something like that.
Is there probably an answer for this?
I have no idea. No clue.
Probably could be. I've never stopped to think about stuff like that. You know, it's any of the zombies that have showed up that have something weird about them. Or like, you know, they're holding something or they're covered by something or they're in a weird area that I can't really fathom how they got to that point. Hey, zombies do the damnedest things.
Yep. So I will say, if you do want to listen to more podcasts about The Walking Dead, I do think there's like a dozen or two dozen of them out there. For a while, I did listen to, I believe it was The Watching Dead. And those guys over there, I don't know if they're still doing it or not, but they do a pretty good job recapping the episodes, and they do give spoilers, but they're pretty good about giving you a heads up about that kind of stuff. So I do recommend you listening to them if you do want to listen to more, you know, episode by episode things about The Walking Dead. And I say, if you guys enjoyed this kind of review of the episode and The Walking Dead and either want Nick and I to do more episodes of The Walking Dead or more shows or movies, let us know. And Nick, you want to go ahead and tell them where they can do that?
Sure. CommandEditPodcast.com. Head on over there and leave a comment on the show notes for this episode, or you can tweet us at CommandEdit, or go ahead, use old-fashioned email, CommandEditPodcast@gmail.com. Let us know what you thought of this episode in particular. Every once in a while, we'll like to shake things up and talk something, you know, pop culture with the TV show or movie that everybody seems to be watching. And I think we did a fairly good job keeping it to the filmmaking aspect of the show, the more like the writing, but also commented a little bit on like the style of the editing of the show itself, how it paced. So we kept the fanisms to, I think, a comfortable minimum. Let us know if you liked this episode, if you enjoyed what we talked about, or if you'd love to hear us talk about anything else. Let us know.
One more Walking Dead rapid fire question for you. Do you think they'll do like a 2-3 episode backstory with Negan like they did for the governor?
Oh, I hope not. I
hope not, too.
Into many words, not needed.
Not needed. Nope.
Nope.
He is what he is.
He is. Yep. I thought about that, too. But yeah, I don't need it. So hopefully if AMC is listening, yeah, scrap that. Don't do that.
They definitely are. They're listening.
I think they do. Yeah, they listen. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Anyways, thank you guys very much for pressing play and plugging us into your ears. Sorry, you got one more thing?
Yes. Next week, we are interviewing the guys from Endcrawl, and that will be a good listen. So look out for that one coming next week.
Absolutely. And as they tweeted out earlier today, have you ever had your client ask you to, quote unquote, really quick, make some end credits? That is the problem that they solve for you. So, yeah, stay tuned for that awesome interview with those guys next week. It's a fantastic service that I do use on a lot of my features, so you should too. Anyways, you guys can subscribe to us, as always, iTunes or what are the other podcasters that podcast
Stitcher?
Apps? Stitcher. Yeah, Stitcher. I forgot about Stitcher for a second there. Or SoundCloud, your podcaster of choice. Let us know if you'd like the podcast to be available on anything else, and we'll do it for you, maybe. Until next time, I'm Nick.
And I'm Josh.
And you're you. Survive the dead.